Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to On Point. I'm Don Allen, and over in Studio B, we have Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. We have a power-packed show today, Mr. Edwards. How are you doing this afternoon?
Real good here in the winter wonderland, Don. Too bad we missed the summer of 2013 here in Minnesota. But hey, what the heck? You can't expect everything. I guess that's what climate change and the reverse is really all about. But hey, looks like we do have a power-packed program here out of the Twin Cities. And from our corporate studios here in downtown Minneapolis. What we got, Don? Let's get us started. Lead us in. I like the opening theme music. It almost sounded like a news break or a bulletin at CNN.
Oh, yeah. Let's get into that. Well, you know, Mr. Edwards, there's been a lot of chatter back and forth regarding Ms. Soledad O'Brien coming into Minneapolis and interviewing Sandra Samuels from the North Side.
Now, let me just correct something. This would be the second time she's been in about a week and a half, right?
Yes, and we have some news that she'll be back in sometime in the next week. We're going to have to interview not only Superintendent Bernadette Johnson at Minneapolis Public Schools, but also I just got a message from a reliable source that she's going to be in to also interview Mr. Chris Stewart, former Minneapolis Public School Board Director, who out of St. Cloud, Minnesota, and I don't know how that worked. But, yeah, we're going to find that out. But what I find troubling, Mr. Edwards, is some of the chatter that's going on back and forth among on the internet and then out here in the Twin Cities. And I don't think that Ms. O'Brien is getting the real picture of what's happening in Minneapolis as far as education goes. And this fluff piece that she's working on with Sandra Samuels in the Northside Achievement Zone is like they're putting on a mask. They're putting on a mask, i.e. philosopher Frantz Fanon, Black Faces, White Masks. And it seems that some of the leadership in Minneapolis has decided to don that white mask and use it to hide behind the disturbing numbers that we have for education here in Minneapolis, especially North Minneapolis, even with the model of the Northside Achievement Zone. You know, how can you rate success in 2035 and 2013, which is one of the programs that NAS has where they have parents and their pre-K school children come in and go through a series of workshops and panels and discussions and interventions. And, you know, they give the child.
Okay, now is this the same achievement zone that acquires houses under poverty program criteria for their $50,000 and $60,000 and $70,000 a year staff?
Yes. And this was brought up last week's show by a former board member of the Northside Achievement Zone who actually blew the cover off the whole Northside Achievement Zone process.
Mm-hmm.
Now also
call's trying to come in on ourselves. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. In the spokesman recorder, there was a story done. Minnesota Spokesman Recorder is the largest and first black newspaper, historical, here in the state of Minnesota. But there was a story done by Ms. Vicki Nash that was put out by NAS that said that they are hiring Northsiders as if to represent, like, they're doing some kind of economic development by hiring Northsiders. But if you look at the NAS model, you know, and the pilot schools that they have, they neglected to have North Senior High School in that model of problem solving. And, you know, North has 267 students. The average test score, I mean, the test score is the performance is
That's
terrible.
That's the North High School that used to have 1,800 students, right?
Yes, sir. Over
okay.
North
okay.
Minneapolis.
Gotcha. Okay.
1,500 James. And they are in one of the list of the top 10 schools in Minneapolis, including Bethune, the Homong International Academy, Green Central Elementary School, Lucy Laney, Cleveland Park Elementary, Riverbend Educational School, and all these schools are in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm. They're referred to as anchor schools. Is that correct? Is that the terminology now?
Yes.
Okay. State-of-the-art terminology. Anchor schools. Okay.
Yes. And so you have these schools that are doing the MCA 3 math average, like let's say Bancroft at 23%.
Okay, let me just say something on that, Mr. Allen.
Okay.
Many of those schools, though, are not within the zone.
Yes, I agree.
The zone.
Yeah, and so with that said, well, we can just talk about schools in the law. Lucy Laney and Bethune and a couple other schools that are within the zone that you wonder the K-12.
No, Don, I think Lucy Laney is outside the zone, and so is Bethune.
Well, I'm glad.
The zone only goes as far south as Broadway.
Yeah, and so if it goes as far, and you're helping me make my point, if it goes as far as south as Broadway, what happens to the school past Broadway and behind Broadway, on the side of Broadway, like I'm talking about in the beginning, North High School. North High School was I think, purposely left out of the zone because Sondra Samuel's husband, City Councilman Don Samuel,
burned down.
Yeah, she says we should burn North High down. But then again, you know, if you're to ask Miss Samuels, who has been posting on Facebook that they're looking for a driver to drive their child 11 miles to another school in South Minneapolis, you know, why aren't you trying to solve the problem here in North Minneapolis where you actually live?
Mm-hmm.
And so that brings up a lot of significant questions on how, you know, yeah, you can say you're hiring people from the north side, but you can't say, like in the story in the Star Tribune, the Q&A that went across with the reporter, that, you know, you're somehow mysteriously or miraculously solving poverty by spending $28 million of the U.S. Promise Neighborhood Grant in North Minneapolis by hiring people from North Minneapolis with a program that gives a T-shirt to a kid that says you're going to graduate in 2035.
So what is the angle by Soledad O'Brien and CNN, because this is actually will be the third time they've been here, because they were here a month and a half ago. They were going to do a piece on Eric Mahmoud, and they had to abandon that piece when the issue of being a convicted felon came up, which I guess they didn't know. They weren't too happy at corporate headquarters of CNN in Atlanta about that misstep, if you will, and so, you know, some dollars had already been spent. Mr. Turner, Ted Turner, who was, you know, that's part of his Turner empire, has not been too happy with what's been going on at his big flagship because CNN is losing money. So I guess they came back here a second time with Soledad O'Brien's Black in America series. Is that what this was all about?
Black in America, or Who's Black in America, or Let's Put on This White Mask and Play Like We're Black in America. Yes.
Okay.
Sir, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is just to kind of give our domestic and international listeners a better feel for kind of what the political and educational genesis was for CNN's interest in the significant excellence of African-American black/Negro students. Only problem is the data that comes from the Minnesota Department of Education, and I'm hoping that Ms. O'Brien and her proxies at CNN will interview the Commissioner of Education here for the state of Minnesota, Ms. Casillas, because you always want to, you know, I mean, I can understand talking to the superintendent, who actually seems to have more of a political commitment to creating as many charter schools as possible while being the superintendent of public schools in Minneapolis, Bernadette Johnson. Oops. I would certainly hope that CNN would talk and, you know, extract from the commissioner of education, who is the keeper of the information, than what I see going on. By the way, I understand that one of the people that CNN is trying to stay away from is State Senator Jeff Hayden, who is also the assistant African-American, South Minneapolis, who is also the assistant majority whip of the Minnesota Senate. I understand they really don't want to talk to him. I wonder why that is. Was there something that Senator Hayden has done that CNN does not feel comfortable with, and that the leadership of the African-American leadership group under Gary Cunningham, and with people such as Chris Stewart and others don't want the state senator to be interviewed about?
Yeah, I mean, I find that problematic also, because I think Jeff Hayden or Senator Hayden should have a voice in this. But I also think, and through my back and forth on Twitter with Ms. O'Brien, that, you know, she should interview or talk to some people outside of that box, outside of the African-American Leadership Forum, outside of Northside Achievement Zone. And, I mean, this could possibly save her job. Well, it's not going to save her job at CNN because she's out of there. But the thing is that this information is critical information, and it's, and the model that she's trying to expose to the general public is a misrepresentation of the Northside Achievement Zone, a misrepresentation of education, in, especially in North Minneapolis, and most definitely a misrepresentation of Black education here in the Twin Cities, not just North Minneapolis or around the Northside Achievement Zone, which has been an oxymoron to say the least.
Okay, so, well, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, Mr. Edwards, I lobbied the school district for a copy of this contract. And when I say, when I talk about Northside Achievement Zone and $28 million and a waste of distributed funds to actively engage students of color in the public schools, I mean, we have another huge waste of money. The contract here I have for the Community Standards Initiative, CFI, this is one contract that they sent me. They wouldn't send me all the information, but it's from a period of September 28th, 2011 to March 30th, 2012. And I know there was another contract in there, but this is the only one that the school felt like they should share with me with the data.
And this is called what now?
This is called the Amended Contract for Services for the Community Standards Initiative.
Okay, all right.
CSI, yes.
Mm-hmm.
It says, conduct a thorough planning process to garner support of young people, parents, community members, public officials, school representatives, park officials, community organizations, and the business community. We'll work to launch high-profile, creative, organized, and exciting community initiative in the spring of 2012. Now, I haven't seen that, Mr. Edwards. Have you seen that at all, that spring 2012 launch they were talking about for last year?
Yeah, well, you know, maybe the representatives maybe they're who's their fiduciary agent? Maybe they're the fiduciary agent should be doing that.
Yeah. The contract is between New Bethel Missionary Baptist Church has fiscal agent for CSI.
New Bethel, they're in North Minneapolis.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's the Reverend
Clarence Hightower. Matter of fact, there's a signature block here, and this was signed off. I have Superintendent Bernadette Johnson's signature on here, and with the contract for CSI signed off on here on September 27th, 2011, actually. And they have methods of evaluation. Contractor should provide, contractor will provide bi-monthly reports to the Office and Family and Community Engagement, surveys of community members. And, you know, Mr. Edwards, I've been actively looking at this. I know you have too. And, I mean, I haven't seen any surveys go out. I haven't seen this kind of engagement that denotes a payment of $50,000.
You know what? Let me maybe can help ourselves here and help the general public. There should have been evaluation reports from in 2011 through 2012 from Edison High School here in Minneapolis, in Northeast Minneapolis. Maybe Ms. O'Brien would want to take a look at those evaluations, because CSI was there in Edison there for a brief period of time. There should be, I'm surprised, I'm shocked that the district would not send you the evaluation documents from that particular period of time. You don't have that in the packet that you received from Stan Allen, who no relation to you?
No relation.
Name spelled differently too, by the way. But didn't you receive the evaluation?
I received nothing but the contract, and I asked them for all and any payments that were made to anyone regarding CSI. And the school board is notorious for doing this, and people that work in the communications department, because what they will do is they will send out, you know, a couple pages of the contract signed with the superintendent's signature. And
how much was that contract worth?
For $15,000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And through the Office of Family and Community Engagement and the superintendents are funding this grant. It was a grant given to New Bethel Missionary Baptist Church for CSI, which is Community Standards Initiatives. It says,
yeah.
And so, I mean, I've never seen a two-page contract like this, and, you know, someone got away with grand larceny on this one, because, I mean, I'm just looking at through the contract, and I don't see anywhere where there's a process to, excuse me, keep kids in school, get kids in school, or to even actively engage the community. And I know I've not seen any results from
wow.
that. And I am going to, most definitely, Mr. Edwards, on Monday, I am going to send this young lady who sent me this an email and ask her for copies of those reports just to see what they're claiming at this point. Because it seems to me like it's a farce, much like, you know, I feel that I test the Northside Achievement Zone is.
Well, let me ask you a question, Mr. Allen. I mean, does the document contain who the board of directors are? They had a board of directors. Would that be correct?
Yes, but the document does not contain that information.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And the document, it does not, it has, you know, New Bethel Missionary Baptist Church as the fiscal agent, and community partnership with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, the City of Minneapolis, and 87 Minneapolis neighborhoods.
Now, wait a minute. Let me go back. I mean, just a minute. The city, I mean, what are these contracts in which there's a relationship or companionship with the City of Minneapolis? I mean, what is the City of Minneapolis doing in the area of education?
Yeah, absolutely nothing, as far as I can see.
Well, then why would they have? Why would they consummate a contract with the City of Minneapolis? Is there someone identified as a principal contact person in the city?
No, that's just it. There is not a principal contractor identified other than the fiscal agent. There is not one person's name on there.
Okay.
It says to develop and implement a positive behavior incentive program for young people residing in Minneapolis, and to improve communications between young people, adults, and parents for the period of September 2011 to March 2012 for an amount not to exceed $15,000.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess the proponents of it, as opposed to the opposition, would say that that's just a minimal amount of money. But then people are saying there are a lot of these small kinds of contracts all over the place. So,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we should be able to get some clarification. You're working on this from your end. You should be able to get some clarification. But you really want those evaluation documents, because the program has already been evaluated by the district's Office of Evaluation. And so there should be a document that would be should be provided by the district. If not, I mean, you may want to make an inquiry to the State Department of Education.
Yes, might have to do that, because we're not, you know, not seeing a whole lot here. And that you know, that just moves me on, Mr. Edwards, to this this 13-grade pilot project.
Uh-huh.
It's a project is established as education employability solution for young adults who are unemployed, underemployed, and not enrolled in post-secondary education and do not have a defined career pathway. And here's what throws me. It says the Commissioner of Education should develop a one-year, 13th grade project, pilot project, with one site being operated by the Minneapolis Urban League. Okay, one site. The Commissioner must select the pilot sites by December 1st, 2013. Interested organizations may submit an application to the Commissioner in the form and the manner prescribed by the Commissioner, including a detailed budget plan and how their program meets the criteria under paragraph B, which means it must be a community-based requirement, a faith organization, have program cohort of 100 young adults for each site, use the following criteria, results of comprehensive career, academic, personal assessment. And this is kind of strange that this is put out, you know, the authored by Ray Dean and
Well, you say Ray Dean, you need to be a little bit. You're talking about state representative Ray Dean of Legislative District 58B. Is that who you're talking about?
Yes, that's what I mean.
Okay, he was one of the authors in the House, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to be kind of clear for our domestic and international audiences. So he was. I have to, let me go back just a couple of sentences there, Don. The commissioner will make a selection by December 1st. Why would you be waiting until almost halfway through the school year? If it's passed the legislature, if it has passed, if it were going to pass, wouldn't you want the commissioner to have made the determination by as early as July 1, no later than August 1?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So
why not December 1? Because that means you're not going to be able to do anything until the school year 2014-2015.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And so it's not making a whole lot of sense. It doesn't. I mean, it's 2 pages, Mr. Edwards. It's not really well
written. Another two-pager.
And there is no in-depth, and I'm no reflection on State Representative Ray Dean at all whatsoever, because I know that Senator Hayden and Senator Champion had their grubby little fingers on it also, and maybe some input, you know, by our 5th Congressional District Congressman from afar. But, you know, this bill for an act to relating to education, establishing a 13 grade pilot project and approximating money is not.
What is the dollar amount, Don? Because again, for our domestic international audience, I mean, so you're talking about how much will the state have to put up? I mean, you're talking about $2, $3, $4, $5, $6 million.
There is appropriation under section 2, line 2.19. It has a dollar sign and then it's blank.
So this has not even gone to the appropriations committee.
No, it doesn't look like
something like that. You would not really be able, by the rules of the legislature, be able to put a dollar figure in. So this has not really had a hearing.
No, that's what it looks like from what.
There's no doubt about it. If there's no dollar figure, then it hasn't gone before the appropriations committee. It hasn't even had a hearing. So. What's being promoted here?
Some more tomfoolery.
I mean, is this a Madison Avenue marketing piece for the Urban League to let folks know that it's still alive here in Minneapolis, or?
Yeah, I think it is. That's because the Urban League, you know, their strongest tenant right now, their source of money is the 5th Congressional District Office with Congressman Keith Ellison.
The federal government. Yeah, federal government is basically carrying the mortgage. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. So. Kind of
and, of course, half of that building is owned by the city of Minneapolis.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people don't know those type of things, Mr. Edwards. And
it's nice
that we can let them know that here on Blog Talk Radio. And, Mr. Edwards, we have a caller who just called.
Oh, well, let's get the caller in here.
Okay. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, what's up, Don? What's up, Mr. Edwards? I heard y'all was asking questions about what was happening with CSI. This is Al Flowers.
Oh, hey,
I mean, what's the question?
Well, I have a contract from the Minneapolis Public Schools for a contract between New Bethel Missionary Baptist Church as fiscal agent for CSI Minneapolis, located at 1115 30th Avenue North as the contractor in the Minneapolis Public Schools. It says, description of services and methods of delivery. 1, conduct a thorough planning process to garner the support of young people, parents, community members, public officials, school representatives, park officials, community organizations, and the business community. We'll work to launch a high-profile, creative, organized, and exciting community initiative spring 2012. And so I guess our first question to the fiscal agent listed on this, because we don't have any names, we just have fiscal agent, you know, when was that launched in 2012? When were the reports turned in for the service outcomes? And what methods of evaluations were used for the?
Let's start off. It got kicked off on August 11th of 2011. CSI, we got together. It was about responsible communication in our community. And so I organized with many community leaders, to help in this process, along with Congressman Ellison, Senator Jeff Hayden, Bobby Champion, Spike Moss, and a lot more of the Urban League, all the rest of them. So I built a big collaboration for CSI. We were working. So that's where CSI came from. And then Clarence Hightower of New Bethel is the administrator and the physical agent of the project, who works on the project, who's the key players on this project, is Coach Larry McKenzie. Dr. Bravado is with the behavior. Spike Moss is going to try to deal with the kids that got the most problems. Todd and Lori is on there. Todd Barnes and Lori Wilson, they're part of the team, and it's a collaboration with a lot of people with Hennepin County. Hennepin County has helped do some. We did what you're saying on the deliverables, all of the things in a $15,000 planning grant. It was a $15,000 planning grant. All those deliverables that was in that grant, creating an advisory committee and doing other things, have all that was established. And it's got some great people on there. And you can get all this information. All you have to do is ask for the final, what we sent in as a final report to the public schools. We've had probably 50, over 50 meetings, and Don Allen, you know some of them, we've had over 50 meetings, and we've had several events by CSI to bring awareness to the community all over the, as many places as we can, because remember, we're talking about $15,000 paying for communication and getting all the stuff we had to get done. We also went up in Edison, and we did that and worked in Edison trying to help the kids up in Edison, and that was nobody got paid for that.
Okay.
So those are some of the things that we've done already and continue to keep trying to work with our kids and our family.
Okay, well, let me just say that's excellent, Mr. Flowers, because earlier, and probably you hadn't tuned in at that point, Mr. Allen pointed out that the document that he was making reference from, he was told by the district that was the only documentation that existed. So you really helped us out by indicating that you provided a final report and a final assessment and evaluation of what it is that you've been doing. And so, Mr. Allen, our responsibility is to indicate to the district that they shortchanged us.
Yeah, and I did. I asked them in detail. I needed everything, payments that were made from 2011 to last Friday, our last Thursday, in detail to who those payments were, inside and outside of CSI contract. And they sent me a two-page form with just the basis with Superintendent Bernadier Johnson's name on it and signature.
We gave a final report of what was done and we still we had $15,000 to plan of what we are doing, and we still moving. We're moving pretty good right now, trying to move forward now. And so, I mean, it's you can get the final report. You could get that. I'm saying, this is about our people. So, that all that stuff is none to it. We got a great team there. We got a great team
trying to get in, and we
fighting about it. They fighting back. They don't want us in either. So, I don't know what this is. We got the information.
Well, I'd like to congratulate you, Al. Maybe you'd like to tell some of our listeners about the your recent trip to Washington, D.C. with the president of the teachers union, representing education.
I went down to D.C. a few weeks ago, and I went down to D.C. and with communities all over the country, from Pittsburgh to New York to Florida to all over San Francisco. Everybody, it was about 28 cities there, and it was community. They were talking about what we were going to do to stop what was happening to our kids and try to stop some of the mass school closing in the urban areas, and everybody got their opinion. And I told the union when I was there to make sure. I know we're stuck in the middle as black people. stuck in the middle on both sides, whether it's labor in the union or whether it's big business in the corporation who wants to control that commodity as African Americans. So we got to stay in the middle and can't lean either way.
Yeah, let me get a clarification, because the what you were saying, the conference was on community engagement. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. All right, there you go.
Yeah, and they got a lot of school closing going on in Chicago, so that Chicago was up there, not happy with what Rahm Emanuel is doing up there. And so then you got the people from New York and they're closing a lot of schools and just in the urban area. So but both sides can be trying to they got to utilize us. We're the ones that's getting killed in this, African Americans. So both sides want us. And we saying we just want the fairness in the middle. That's where I'm at.
Well, all right, appreciate you calling in. We're in studio, we got other calls. I appreciate you calling in, and you've given clarification. Thank you.
And you can get any of that information that we just talked about. You ain't got to go to them. I got it.
I can get it for you.
Okay. All right. Real good.
All right.
Real
thank
good.
You. All right.
Real good. All right. Take care, man. All right. All right. Don, look like we got that taken care of, because obviously the district, though, because you made a formal request under color of law, and so everyone's clear, you asked for a number of other programs. Am I correct?
Yes.
It wasn't just CSI. It was a number of other programs. But we can get that data, so we look forward to picking that up as soon as possible to maintain clarity, really, about what's going on in the programs out here, particularly in light of all the education meetings that are going on. We've had a couple big education meetings at UROC. Two Saturdays ago, the powerful Leadership Alliance under Gary Cunningham and his group met from 8 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon, talking in terms of future of education and et cetera. We have leadership within that organization representing Hopkins High School, the high school district against African Americans in a regrettable situation out there. So it's clear that our organizations are working closely with the school districts in more ways than one.
Yeah.
So, hey, look forward to that. Okay, what else we got, Don? Any other calls coming in?
We have no calls, but I'd like to
give that number. We didn't even give the number out, and we got a call. Go ahead.
Yes. 347-426-3904. Again, the call-in number, listener call-in number, 347-426-3904. We invite you to call in, ask a question, and talk about a topic. And we've just gone over the Northside Achievement Zone, CSI, Minneapolis, Community Standards Initiative, and the Urban League 13th grade, which, I think that we could ball all the papers up that we have and throw them in the garbage can as far as assisting our black youth in a successful education engagement here.
Now, we want to be clear for our listeners, both locally, domestically, internationally, when reviewing the 13th grade documents, regrettably, there is no dollar amount in the legislation, and as I've said just minutes ago, that means that the 13th grade has yet to go before the Appropriations Committee, because you can't put a number down until the Appropriations Committee signs off on it one way or the other, or lets it out of committee, or doesn't let it out of committee. So we're still looking for that number for the Urban League and other sites. Was that the terminology that was used, Mr. Allen?
Yes.
Other sites and locales that the Commissioner of Education is to select, if you will. So we want to take a look at all of that, because with Soledad O'Brien in town, taking a look at the success of education for the African American community, want to make sure that we get a better understanding on why it is that our well-educated black youngsters are not able to get well-paying jobs.
Yeah, and
nobody
looking,
talks about that.
Do you think there's
a reason for that, or what?
Yeah, there's a reason for that. I mean, there's quite a few reasons for that, because when you look at what the angle that Ms. O'Brien is taking compared to what's really going on here in the Twin Cities, it's out of sync, Okay, there's no way that Northside Achievement Zone can solve poverty, like Sandra Samuelson stated in the Star Tribune interview last week. And there's no way that with the current infrastructure, especially North Minneapolis or Minneapolis in general, I mean, we hear this complaint, Mr. Edwards, all the time. These young kids, you know, when we were kids, when I was a teenager in Minneapolis, I had a choice of working at any fast food restaurant on Lake Street because all I had to do is want to work. Now the kids that want to work cannot work because adults from other countries, which, you know, you can't blame them for their hustle, have taken those positions and are responsible and are at work all the time, on time, every day. And so our youth have no outlets. But another shameful thing here, Mr. Edwards, in Minneapolis, is that Mayor R.T. Ryback has not announced any youth employment. Like they used to have the Neighborhood Youth Corps back in the summer, back in the 70s and 80s. And R.T. Ryback and his staff or the city council has not announced any youth employment programs here. So we will have an interesting bloody summer. And we do have another caller, Mr. Edwards. Let's go.
All right, let's get him
in.
Let's get him in. We're going until 4:30, a 90-minute program today. Caller?
Hello, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Terry Izagiri from the Minneapolis Mayor / Voice for Diversity in America.
Yes, how can I help you?
Well, I was going to call about NAS, but Al Flowers just called in, and he still didn't answer the question as to who the people were getting paid. I'd like to bring attention that he brought up Hennepin County. I'm wondering if Hennepin County gave that money directly to CSI or if that was another funneling of money. Hennepin County did grant Reverend Coleman, that became the fiscal
agent.
Coleman from the Northside Community Recovery Team of $150,000.
Okay. I apologize. That's right.
To do
right.
The
that
same
was,
thing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I find that interesting considering that Bruce Bork and Al were working on this, and what I had heard had offices down at Summit Academy. And Bruce Bork used to be of Greater Council Churches, which was the original fiscal agent for the NCRT. So is some of that money being funneled in different directions?
Well, we haven't seen those reports at all whatsoever. And, by the way, Chris Stewart just confirmed she's doing a series on the students in the Minneapolis Public Schools Mastery Schools. So, yes.
Mastery? That's the part of the Eric Bakmu Empire.
Yes. I just got confirmed.
Okay. Well,
I just got the confirmation from Chris Stewart that she will be interviewing him in regards to that and probably interviewing Eric Bakmu.
Let's finish with this caller. Go ahead, Matt.
Well, and I mentioned the Al Flowers situation, so I do have some questions because the bottom line is I want to know who is getting paid, and secondly, how are they communicating this? Because I've seen Mr. Flowers, for all transparency, handing out flyers at young black youths who have been murdered outside of their funerals. So how are they communicating this? Also, when he talks about Spike Moss and them, I have video when they pulled Teamworks in to listen to them speak. So they pulled them off a day of work. So how are they engaging the community other than pulling them off a work day to speak to them?
Mm-hmm.
That's as far as CSI and their communication with some of the people that Al mentioned, Spike Moss, et cetera.
I want to go back, Ms. Izagiri. You brought up Reverend Coleman. Now, Reverend Coleman was the recipient of money from the county to do what?
Another group was created for community outreach, and they were granted $150,000 from Hennepin County. And
correct.
Reverend Coleman had become the fiscal agent for NCRT, the Northside, when the tornado happened.
Tornado relief group.
Correct.
Yes.
A lot of people give money, but a lot of different groups are created. And the bottom line is we still don't know individually who is getting the money.
And that's one of the problems that my colleague, Mr. Allen, ran into when he was asking for documentation from the school district about this, that the pertinent information obviously didn't come through, but Mr. Flowers just indicated to us that that information is in the hands of the district, and so Mr. Allen has assured our listeners that he will be asking specifically for that information based on what has been said by principals affiliated with CSI. Now, has an evaluation, to the best of your knowledge, and I know you're involved with the media group, has the evaluation and the first annual report from Reverend Coleman and Lewis King and others, has that been officially made, to the best of your knowledge?
I have not seen anything. And I've actually gone to the CSI website, and it's never been updated. I've never seen any. There's nothing of reports online. So, and if they have reports in their hand, why don't they put it on their website?
Yeah, good point.
And then I'd like to get back to NAS, the Northside Achievement Zone.
Right. Okay.
I want to verify some of the information that, and I'm working on a story myself on this, with your caller from last week. She had mentioned that employees are getting houses through Urban Homeworks. I actually have video, because remember, Peace Foundation slid quietly into Northside Achievement Zone. And they had a employee of the Peace Foundation, Don Samuels, introduced him, that was getting a home through Urban Homeworks. And I did go to Northside Achievement Zone's website, and this person is still employed with Northside Achievement Zone. So, you know, employees are getting homes through, at least one I know of that I have on video, through Urban Homeworks.
Okay, one second here. You had asked questions earlier about CSI, and
yes.
The switchboard is just lit up, and you might have an answer. Al, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I can't believe. First of all, I want to say, in our community, we're trying here, and all that negative what Terry is talking about. Attacking black teachers. Her problem is, let us do it for a chance. Let African Americans try to get something done to help our people who are dying and who's economically deprived. And so I have a hard time when people like Terry is sitting up there talking about what we're doing when white folks are stealing millions and millions of dollars.
You know, Al, do we really want to bring up, you had a bunch of kids go down there to the Urban League, getting their information through Emerge, promising them jobs.
That ain't what we're talking about right now. You can have 100
no,
subjects.
No, these kids went down there
subjects.
With resumes in hand. I do give a damn about the community. You're right in your pocket.
No,
how much
you
money
ain't
are you getting
well,
paid?
Well, we've got other issues to deal with. Maybe, you know, folks can deal with that in their own private conversation.
Quit whining on black folks. That's what I'm, you know. Quit whining on black folks and see if we're doing
Okay, Mr. Edwards, I just put them in the chat.
Yeah, put them in the chat room. Let them go at it with each other there. We are being told that the information will be forthcoming. Our responsibility will be to lay that information out to our listening audience as soon as it comes to us. And it should be in our hands as early as our program next Saturday. So appreciate both callers and appreciate Mr. Flowers calling back and getting clarification on that and et cetera. But let me do this, because I'm hearing a lot of discussion about, black folk taking care of the business of black folks. So I need to bring to the attention of our community and to the broader nation, if you will, an incident that's happened in this city in which...
Yes.
When we first broke this story, there was very little interest. I wish we'd have gotten some of the passionate calls that we're getting right now when we asked the question about who got the money. Just before Thanksgiving of last year, this program broke an exclusive story of the beating by Minneapolis police inside the city of Robbinsdale, Minnesota, which is right adjacent to Minneapolis. It's along the border of North Minneapolis. a man by the name of DeMarco Booker, 30 at that time, 32-year-old African American, was pursued by Minneapolis police. In an interview, his attorney, first of all, his attorney, in a live interview with us here in the first Saturday in December, confirmed that Mr. Booker did not stop as he should have, but that part of the reason was his fear of the officer who later is shown in a video beating him unconscious, if you will, on the streets after pursuing him into North Minneapolis. And the prima facie for the stop, by the way, was never established. There was no traffic violation. Officer Oates indicated he had been happened to see Mr. Booker in a parking lot at a local club in North Minneapolis and decided to, quote-unquote, check him out. There was a 10-year history between this officer and Mr. Booker, and it was not very pleasant. We interviewed the attorney. Mr. Booker was not physically able to be a part of that program first Saturday in December of last year, for he was still in a semi-coma. His face had been crushed after being beat into the pavement there in Robbinsdale. 2 weeks later, Mr. Booker was making an appearance in state district court here in Hennepin County, when federal agents from the ACF and et cetera actually came into the courtroom and took Mr. Booker into custody. He was taken to the local federal holding facility at Elk River, Minnesota, which is about 45 miles north of the Twin Cities. He was charged with a felon in possession of a gun. Now, during the time that his attorney in the civil matter, because his attorneys for the criminal matter was the Meshbesher Law Firm, which has done a terrible job of representing him, that one of the things we were told, Mr. Allen and I have gone back over on demand and listened to our own program, and it was clear, and we were clearly told, and the world was told, that the gun that Mr. Hodges was being charged with being in possession of was not found until 2 days later.
Yes.
At the impound lot. Now, Mr. Hodges is taken from the state courtroom to the holding facility. He is charged with being a felon in possession of a gun. He went to trial last week, friends, here in Minneapolis, in the federal court building in downtown Minneapolis. All-white jury heard the case. Took only a couple days. He was found guilty, and he is about to be sentenced to 10 years in the federal penitentiary. Now, one of the significant pieces of what has happened in this miscarriage of justice was that his attorneys reported that the police maintained that they saw the gun in the car at the time of the arrest and the beating. And then Mr. Booker was beaten into unconsciousness. In fact, he was in a coma for over 24 hours. And Mr. Allen went back and took a look at a tape done by WCCO television here about 6 weeks ago.
Yes, sir.
That was 3.5 months late by Reggie Chapman, African-American reporter for CCO. In that tape, the police are clearly heard saying that it was not a fucking gun, it's a cell phone.
Yeah.
In the trial, hate to use that terminology, in the trial, police officers testified, those same officers on that tape testified, that they saw the gun in the car, and later the individual who actually owned the car, who was too drunk to drive it, in exchange for not being charged with also being a felon in possession of a gun, testified that he told Mr. Hodges that there was a gun under the seat.
Mm.
Now, what has happened is that the federal public defender never attempted to bring that video into play. The judge was aware of the video and had seen the video and was aware that the video contradicted the testimony of the white police officers, but because it was not entered as in evidence, there are certain restrictions that a judge has on him and that if the matter would have to be taken up on appeal. One of the things that the judge did in conclusion, Mr. Allen, is that when the federal prosecutor, upon the rendering of the verdict of guilty against Mr. Hodges, immediately asked the court to sentence him and incarcerate him immediately, to the credit of Judge Tenheim, the judge declined to do that and indicated that sentencing will take place in 3 months. Now, during this whole period of time, this community has been absolutely silent about what happened to this African-American, all right? The beating, if you will, and the miscarriages of justice that have gone on and on and on infinitum, all right? And so we are here today to report and update what probably is the final update on Mr. Hodges, because he will be sentenced, and if the judge follows the guidelines, it will probably be 5 years to 10 years in a federal institution for a crime that he did not commit. All right? Any questions?
And we do have a caller.
Yeah, let's get him.
Okay, caller, you're live on the air. Hello? Okay, I guess they're going to be quiet then. But, Mr. Edwards, I do have the tape from that report on WCCO where you can clearly... Okay, let's get that rolling. Here we go.
And all you callers out here, listen.
Demario
to
Booker says police stopped him and then beat him until he blacked out. As Rex Chapman shows us, the whole thing was caught on camera.
Headaches, pain, memory loss. It's torture.
Demario Booker says November 20th, 2012 is the night his life changed forever.
He kneeled down that night and told me he was going to kill me.
Booker was with friends at a bar in North Minneapolis when he says he saw Minneapolis police officer John Oakes.
He rode to the parking lot, pointed his finger at me.
Booker says he was scared and jumped into the driver's seat of his friend's car and drove off. Officer Oakes followed. This is video from the dash camera inside a police cruiser. It shows the chase that went through the streets of Robbinsdale and ended near the intersection of Lake Road and Indiana Street North. This is video of what happened when the chase ended. Booker explains what he did when he stopped the car.
I got out, I put my hands up, and I laid down on the ground.
That's when Booker says police used excessive force to take him into custody.
He started beating me, punching me, kicking me on my head, and punching me on my face. I blacked out and I woke up in the hospital.
Booker was in intensive care for more than 24 hours. He had multiple broken bones in his face and nose, bruised ribs and staples in his head in four different places. Medical records from North Memorial Medical Center obtained by WCCO spell out the officer's version of what happened. According to those records, officers claimed Booker ran for two blocks before he was tackled. They claimed he was resisting arrest. His attorney points out the video shows things differently. He was not resisting, but watched as three officers tackled him, punching, kicking, and kneeing him in the head, all while Booker appeared limp and lifeless.
Demario says that the reason he fled was because he was scared. And I think you can see why he was scared.
We showed the video to former Washington County Sheriff deputies Pat Erickson and Jesse Kurtz for their assessment.
He's crossed two lanes of traffic. That's not someone cooperating. That's not someone doing what he's told.
Both men say the officers in question did what was necessary to control the situation.
If I'm a shift commander, like I was, and I was critiquing something like this with the sheriff or somebody, what do you think? I'd say, deck one. I mean, they really did.
And to lay people, sometimes it looks like this is very violent. But sometimes it's necessary to control people that don't want to be controlled, but you do have to use a certain amount of force to do so.
All he had to do was cuff him and put him in a squad car. Sure, he deserved to be arrested because he had fled when they tried to stop him. Now, why they were trying to stop him is another matter. I would contend they had no valid reason to stop him.
Police claimed Booker had a gun. In the video, you can hear the officer say, the two people in the car told investigators they never saw Booker with a gun. A gun was found in that same car once it was researched in an impound lot. Booker was arrested days later for being a felon in possession of a firearm. He has been in federal custody ever since.
Minneapolis police say a case was opened in connection to the arrest of Demario Booker and investigated and closed. Officer.
Okay. So did you get that?
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Let me just say some clarification. that with respect to Reggie Chapman's report and the kind of misstatement by the attorney on this program in December of last year. Mr. Booker never ran for two blocks or across two freeways. If you go back and take a look, oh, by the way, one of the most interesting pieces about that video, it was shown on the 5 o'clock news and was never shown again. I was lucky enough to see it live when it was shown. And consequently, it was because of that that my attention was drawn to the statement by the police officer relevant to the fact that it was not a gun that they said they saw, but it was a cell phone. Now, I repeat again what I said just minutes ago. In testimony under oath, both officers indicated that they saw a gun laying under the front seat on the driver's side. That was absolutely untrue. And, in fact, on this program, in the first Saturday in December, the same attorney that you heard on the tape, Michael Patton, said clearly to us that the gun was not found until 2 days later at the forensic impound lot of the Minneapolis Police Department. Bottom line, though, whatever people want to say, this man, this African-American, this black man is going to do 10 years in the federal penitentiary for allegedly being a felon in possession of a gun.
And no one's saying nothing, not a word, not a speaking word.
I bet you they're not. Yeah. So that's our update, and, of course, if anyone has any questions, give us a call. But I doubt if they will have any questions whatsoever. What else we got, Mr. Allen?
Well,
still got 35 minutes.
Yeah,
we got a lot of time.
We've got a lot of time, yeah. I want to give that number again. You're listening to On Point, broadcasting live from the Apple Studios in downtown Minneapolis. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904, and the lines are wide open. Well, Mr. Edwards, it's very interesting because I just got this this information, or this young lady who said that she goes by the name of Frustrated in Minnesota. She wrote a note to us. She says, "Hi, my name is Frustrated in Minnesota. I work at Harvest Prep and Best Academy Schools. I am writing this response to your article on the Minnesota African American Museum. I actually do not understand what is going on with the institutions that are supposed to help educate and preserve our culture and contributions. Working in education with 99% African and African-American students, kindergarten through eighth grade, it's hard to understand why we do not really have any institutions such as a history or cultural center and our arts museum that our community can embrace. Also, that Minnesota has a very screwed image of African Americans because it has a choice to know about who we are instead of a respect for our culture because we have contributed to history and the local economy. I mean, how do you gain respect for people with nothing to contradict racist stereotypes? Thank you for your time. Sincerely, Frustrated in Minnesota." So I'd like to send her a shout out.
Okay, and this young lady or female was writing about the Minnesota Black History Museum, right?
Yeah, she says, and she goes into depth, but that's the only thing that she would let me read on the air.
And I can understand that. We reviewed that. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
And so she also directed me to the author Bell Hooks, who wrote one of her many books, Rock My Soul. I'll get into that in a minute, but there is a lot of growing concern, Mr. Edwards, here in Minneapolis and St. Paul and in the state of Minnesota, for that matter, of these groups being created or that have been around for a while, also that have done little to nothing. The Minnesota African American History Museum, which is now closed. I actually looked in the windows. There's nothing in there. And I was over south one day, decided to, trespass and go ahead and look, and there was nothing in there. There was no one in the back in the carriage house. And so you wonder what happens with these.
Television set still sitting out there on the side?
No, I didn't see that. I didn't see that. That's probably gone.
Been out there for 7 months, but go ahead.
Yeah, and so and then you think about the organizations that should stand up. A lot of people, Mr. Edwards, as you know, criticize us. You know, there's one young lady, Lisa Marie. I'm just going to go ahead and put her name out there because I was so disgusted at this meeting regarding Hopkins High school on this last past week that she needs to be addressed on this, that, you know, we don't get people jobs here at On Point, Black Focus, IBNN, or Black Politics in Minneapolis. We don't make public policy. There are people that are responsible for that in our community which are not doing their job. So don't get on your Facebook page, your Twitter account, and come after us. That we're staying in our lane. And these people that should be in their lane that are just lining their pockets with money and not doing anything, those are the people that you send information to. A message to Tanya Johnson. If someone's doing something crazy, i.e. your message regarding Brett Buckner and the political process, put it out there. Let you know, I'm not someone that you go to put your laundry out in the streets where people come back at me. I'm not a member of the DFL, never have been, never will be, unless they all become Republicans. But with that said, Mr. Edwards, there are some, you know, there's some shocking instances of our organizations, as in the case of DeMario Booker. Where was the Minneapolis Urban League? Where was the NAACP? Where was the Sanctified African-American Leadership Forum, who probably would not want to deal with that because of the white mask that they wear, and they are so above, you know, blackness that, you know, nothing gets done. So.
Well, no doubt about it, and I think that the Booker situation, again, we're talking about Merrill Booker, not talking about Booker T. Hodges, the president of the NAACP, so that these confused people don't get further confused. We're talking about an African-American that not only was set upon by a white officer who had been harassing him for 10 years, if you will, but we're talking about a severe beating that almost killed him. If, in fact, the doctors at North Memorial that night in November, that Tuesday, indicated that if he'd have been struck with a couple more blows, he probably would have died. We're talking about that was brought forward on this program, that his attorney of record for his civil case came on this program, talked in terms of the circumstances and et cetera. We went back, researched that, had it all confirmed. We continued to carry that issue for almost 3 months. We didn't get really a single call except from our brother and longtime listener, James. We didn't get nothing from nobody talking about, no concern about that. And the rationale was, well, he was a convicted felon. Well, I know a whole lot of people that have been going back and forth with you, as an example, Mr. Allen, that have called in this program who are convicted felons or have members of their families who are convicted felons. And if we were to take that kind of position here at On Point, Black Political, we'd be called, manure in the middle of the road kind of thing. And I'm just fascinated at the kind of logic and rationales that these folks come up with. I mean, when I hear a statement that the white folks are stealing the money, so it means it's okay for us to do it, I'm bothered by that.
Yes, exactly. And then they feel, you know, they have no sense of integrity at all whatsoever. But one of the things, Mr. Edwards, is why I brought the CSI contract up, and for full disclosure, you know, back in 2011, I received a contract for work I actually did for the Minneapolis Public Schools for some artwork, two commercials I filmed, and an ad campaign, which was delivered to them in its entirety. And these same people that actually called into the show today and people that told them to call into the show today attacked me publicly. Like, why are you giving him this contract? Why is he getting this money? And they went absolutely berserk. And see, but the difference between my $15,000 contract and their $15,000 contract is that you could see the results. Okay? That was the big difference.
Gotcha.
So if anybody has anything to say, our phone lines, again, are wide open. That number is 347-246, excuse me. That's 347-426-3904, and it's a little bit after 4. We have a better part of 30 minutes to go into this. Hey, Mr. Edwards, we should give Sports Illustrated, KQRS, Mark Rosen at WCCO, and WMMS in Cleveland a big shout-out and a big middle finger, because your prediction, you know, what happened with the Timberwolves and that Mr. Khan fella over there?
Absolutely correct, Don. what happened was I was the first journalist anywhere in the country to raise the question actually as early as April of 2012 in my column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder about a peculiar pattern that was starting to emerge under the Kahn administration. I really want to separate Glenn Taylor from this, the owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and the reason being is that I'm very much aware of Mr. Taylor's decision to send David Kahn packing, okay? But in February 2012, I'm watching a game, and the only African-American on the floor as part of the starting five was Wes Johnson, University of Syracuse, at that time second-year player forward. And it was I began to realize that I was seeing more and more of an absence of African-Americans that were on the bench, that we were starting more and more. Anyways, in October of last year, the Star Tribune and myself came with articles that raised questions about the plan to purify racially the Minnesota Timberwolves. And it was hidden under the disguise of bringing in more European players. And, of course, there had been a high profile with the signing of Ricky Rubio, if you will, but additional players were brought in. Well, we were quoted in the article, the failing of the Timberwolves, with indicating that this was all a part of a design plan to whiten this team, if you will.
Yes.
And, in fact, in our column a year before, we said the word whitening. Well, we came under attack, and David Kahn was ticked off and et cetera. What David Kahn didn't know is that I had a tape of an interview he did in Reno, Nevada in July of 2012 in which he blasted the billionaire Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, who is the owner of the Portland Trailblazers of the NBA, in which he called Paul Allen a dink and all kinds of other things, which is a no-no. It caused Glenn Taylor a lot of embarrassment. Glenn did not take an action at that particular time when we revealed in our column, we never got a call about that either here on this program, about the fact that that these kinds of disparaging remarks had been made about a fellow owner by David Kahn as he was let out at Portland. He was forced out of Portland for some very questionable practices, if you will. And so we came under attack, and Sports Illustrated said it was one of the most stupidest things they had ever heard for us to indicate that there was actually a reverse segregation going on, and et cetera, et cetera. Well, in a column in early November of last year, we said the following, because we know how owners think. We know the game. We know the sport. We said that if, based on this new experience of basically putting an all-white team on the floor in the NBA, a league dominated by African-Americans and others of quote-unquote color, that if the Vikings did not, if the Timberwolves did not win 45 to 50 games and make the playoffs, that David Kahn should be fired. Well, we knew that that resonated. That caught the attention of Glenn Taylor, and that's what happened. The team was a disaster. The season was a disaster. The fans tried to support the Timberwolves. They were starting to get back in the stands and et cetera. But the fact of the matter is it was a disaster, okay? Injuries and et cetera, lack of conditioning and et cetera finally caught up to him. So 2 days ago, Glenn Taylor fired David Kahn, and he brought in Flip Saunders, who has a rich history here in the state of Minnesota, former University of Minnesota Gopher basketball player, 72 to 75, 76, who has become the vice president of operations succeeding David Kahn. Now, I'm just elated, okay, because I can tell you some of the folks in our so-called leadership community were running down telling, now they wouldn't be quoted because the Star Tribune actually went after them, and with the exception of one individual who joined with me in my observation, they would not make any statements attacking our analysis that this was a disastrous policy change by the Timberwolves. Well, Glenn Taylor agreed, okay? And so, like I said, 2 days ago, David Kahn was sent packing, and I doubt if David Kahn will get a job with any NBA team anytime in the near future. So, again, appreciate it. Shout out to the individuals and the radio station in Cleveland that Mr. Allen identified.
Yep, WMMS. I heard that interview where they just were like, you know, after you hung up, they started to talk trash. And I said, well, we'll see what happens. And sure enough, you were right on the money. And, you know, I was kind of shocked, too, even though I'm not a big sports person, but I know they lost. They went on a 16-game a road game losing streak, and you can't put that many white boys on a court together. You'll be bound
not
to
lose. Not in the NBA. Okay?
Not in the NBA.
You may do it in Minnesota intercollegiate high school or intercollegiate some college, Crookston playing UMD, but you can't do it in the NBA.
No, not at all. I agree.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That was a good one. But you know, I don't see any these people rushing the call, because I did post that information, Mr. Edwards, on Cleveland the Buzzer WMMS Facebook page, saying, hey, you guys probably need to call Mr. Edwards up and congratulate him on his prediction and kind of change your thinking, and kind of poking fun at him there. And
let me tell you something else that I find fascinating about some of these folks. When Tubby Smith went under, we were later joined by our two colleagues at the Spokesman Recorder, but as it pertains to all the so-called leadership and those who are talking in terms of being out there for the brothers and sisters, no one said a word about what happened to Tubby, okay? And one of the things that I was fascinated by, even on the national level, with people like Stephen S. Smith and all those guys, that with the firing of Tubby Smith here, the Big Ten in basketball does not have a single African-American as head coach. Yet 60-65% of the players on Big Ten teams are African-Americans. And, of course, on the national average, it's probably more like 80% in a lot of other conferences. But you have to understand, all of the Big Ten schools, and actually it's the Big 12 because there's now 12 and there'll be 13, I guess, Rutgers comes in 2015. You have to understand, these are all, Mr. Allen, so-called northern liberal states, in which all of these institutions, and I'm going to name them, if you will, and go right from west to east, Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Illinois, Indiana, Purdue, Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State. Those are all great white liberal states, right?
Yes, yes.
Not a single one of those institutions has an African-American as the head basketball coach. Yet they make a tremendous amount of money and revenue off the talents and the success that black athletes bring to their institution in those states that we just named.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fascinated around here with all the leadership and the great liberals and the great black spokespersons that no one said nothing about it. Now, maybe it's beyond their capacity. Maybe I'm trying to be more than fair. Maybe it's just the fact that intellectually they don't have the capabilities. Okay. And by the way, let me just say this also for the silence that I heard this time last year. And to my friends and colleagues at the Ames Elks Lodge and the Elks Fraternal Organization, who African-Americans were beaten by Minneapolis police last year, and there was nothing but silence. In fact, some people that have called into this program were actually laughing about the fact because they thought that yours truly had gotten the hell pounded out of him, okay? Read our comments and read our story in next week's Spokesman Recorder.
Mm.
Because we really set them up in regards to, we knew that there would not be an investigation of the misconduct of the Minneapolis Police Department, and we refer you to the story on the front page of the MSR with respect to Chief Jhené Harto talking in terms of transparency and commitment and respect to the citizens of the city of Minneapolis. What she was talking about was white citizens, because her police have no respect for African Americans and others of color. Okay? Read our story next week in the Spokesman Recorder on the courageous African Americans, members of the Elks Lodge, who some of you out there were laughing at, thought it was funny that they had shotguns placed at the back and we were kicked and et cetera. You thought that was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I have a very good memory, you understand, about when that happened to other folks, quote-unquote, the outrage that was we were told that we needed to display and come forward with. It's a funny world we live in, Mr. Allen. It's a funny world. What do we got, man? But give that number out again. I want to hear some of the voices.
Yeah, the number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And, Mr. Edwards, I want to let you know I've been contacted here and texted by a couple people who want to organize a protest in front of the Minneapolis Urban League. And I told them, I said, yeah, I think it's a good idea. Just, you know, let us know the details. We will make sure that it gets broadcast out there. If you guys are serious about this, they want to, from the list here that I see, they want to protest this 13th grade. They want to know how come the Urban League does not publicly announce their board meetings or community meetings for the board.
And by the way, Mr. Allen, you and I know that the Urban League is allegedly a membership organization. When is the last time they had a membership meeting?
I couldn't tell you. I've never got a notification. They also want to know Mr. Scott Gray's criminal history background, if any, and if there
1988, 1987.
They want to know that, and if how he was vetted as the president of the Urban League. And I'm just looking at the list here. They want to know the role Alfred Babington Johnson played in the stair step fight. Oh, they're pretty in depth here. I'm just looking at the list I just printed up here on the printer in Studio A, and I'm just looking at the list of demands that they have from the Minneapolis Urban
League. Wow. Now, does this include Mr. Gray's business in Madison, Wisconsin?
Yeah, there's a list here asking about, you know, it says here, quote, Mr. Scott Gray, it seems you have a successful Subway sandwich business in Madison, Wisconsin. Why wouldn't you bring that entrepreneurial spirit and process to residents of North Minneapolis so they could be successful? So, yeah, that's pretty interesting right there in itself. And so,
absolutely, absolutely.
So this group is actually planning.
The chairman of the – oh, that's right. It's Mr. Al McFarland.
Yes. Insight
he's the chair
News.
Of the board.
Al
Maybe
McFarland.
We can find out, you know, when is the next membership meeting and when will be the next audit and financial report of the organization. See, here's the thing. I obviously have a lot invested in the Urban League, and that's all a part of history. But I don't want to see my Urban League here in Minneapolis go the way of the St. Paul Urban League.
Mm-hmm.
And close down, depart, never to be spoke of again. And I just don't want to see it happen. Here's the other reason I don't want to see it happen. See, some way or another, they're probably going to come up with the money to build the People Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that, you know, Summit OIC and the Urban League and others are having meetings, and they're saying that they're going to put a 700 or 800, 900 to 1,000 black men and women on that site down there. And I'm just trying to figure out how they're going to do that.
It's utterly
impossible.
Particularly
in light of the story out of St. Paul with regards to the restoration of the state capitol and the charge by a company out of Kansas City, Missouri, J.E. Dunn, big white construction company, that said that there are no black people in this state that have been properly trained. Now, Mr. Allen, I can't believe that. I know that that can't be true, can it?
Well, you know, I know they were having trouble finding people to cut marble and sweep the floors and carry wheelbarrows, so I don't know what's going on. But that's, you know, that falls on that Kevin Lindsay, the commissioner of human rights over there, who...
Well, when Kevin Lindsay was asked by J.E. Dunn to just come up with six people, he went to have a meeting at Summit, and Summit couldn't come up with the six workers.
Wow.
And see, that's confirmed by the story 5 weeks ago in the Minneapolis Star-Tribune, oh, that's the white folks' paper, though. You're not going to attack them. Star Tribune would want a copyrighted story, and J.E. Dunn, the company out of Kansas City, delivered a letter to the governor on Mr. Lindsay by saying, we would want to do the right thing, we're trying to meet our goals, but y'all don't have any qualified African-Americans in the state of Minnesota that can carry that out. That's why we went down and got the gentlemen of the round table. Do you know that they now have 125 black journeymen, artisans, ready to come to work here, including, get this, and for some of them sisters that listen in on our program, we've got two sisters who are steel workers, work way up there, man, on them girders.
Mm-hmm.
African-American sisters, black women, journey women, if you will, with over 7,000 hours of journeyman expertise, ready to come to work, okay?
Yeah.
So I'm just asking the question. In that, you know, we're being challenged. I just want to ask the questions because there's a whole lot of other stuff we can talk about. You know, but being nice. But go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to call here. I'm just gonna let the number dial because see if anybody picks up over here, so we can find out about these Urban League meetings, and they might pick up, they might not pick up. But I just thought
Urban League.
No, this is the chairman of the Urban League's number.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just gonna see if he answers the phone here and see if we can get some information regarding the Urban League. Yeah. I know it's Saturday too. You know, Saturday you hobnobbing with your elite social cabal friends.
Well, they just got through it. They just got through with their meetings over at UROC. You know, they meet over there early in the mornings. The Leadership Alliance and talk in terms of the wonderful things they're going to do in the area of education, economic development, and things like that. So, yeah. By the way, has the grocery store, the big grocery store there on Glen, has it reopened?
No, it has not, and I regret to inform the community. I know I really celebrated this online as it being the first black-owned, black American-owned grocery store in 25 years, and it led WCCO to go out and do a report. It is now closed and up for sale.
You mean the convenience store put together by a group of powerful African-American? You got to be kidding. It went under in less than 6 months?
Yes, yes. It is now up for sale. They are liquidating what is in there. And,
what did you say? What was the word you used? Liquidating?
Liquidating, yes. And I apologize to all my readers because, you know, I thought that...
Well, you need to, Mr. Allen. As a conservative, you need to because I know you had a feel-good about them. Wow.
Yeah, I did. Well, I had a feel-good about it because, you know, this model could... You know, I tried to you give people the benefit of the doubt. Okay, you say okay, well, he couldn't run a charter school, but maybe he could run a grocery store. Okay, we'll take it down a couple notches, you know.
Okay.
And this was a chance for the young people in our community to see economic development at work in real time by a black person.
But
what has happened is we see another failure by another black person who positions himself very high to Miss Jackie Cherry Holmes running for Minneapolis mayor.
You got to be careful because you'd be surprised at some of the people that support Miss Cherry Holmes and Mr. Buckner. Let me just say this too, because in that, you know, one two people want to talk about full disclosure and pretend like they got amnesia. You know that the gentleman that we were talking about at the convenience store, did you know at one time he wanted to put a minimum security prison in North Minneapolis?
No, I did not. You got to tell me about that.
Yeah. And by the way, for those that jump up and down, say there they go, they're hating on the black community. Now, it's documented irrefutably. Go back and take a look at the Minneapolis Star Tribune about a decade ago. Yeah. Brother wanted to put a minimum security prison in North Minneapolis. Yeah. And one of the rationales he was quoted as saying in the article was that it'll put their loved ones closer to them.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. You know, maybe that's what we'll start doing over the next number of weeks, just kind of going back and doing like President Booker T. Hodges of the NAACP did 3 years ago in an award-winning story in the spokesman record. Maybe we'll just start to kind of go back and just kind of open the books up. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes. We probably have to do that. Get some information. Just start putting it out there in the mass. So I keep looking over at this fax that I received from this group that's really serious about protesting in front of the Minneapolis Urban League during a business day over lunch hour so people don't miss their work.
Wow.
And I said, well, yeah, that'd be great because this is the first time that someone has even talked about doing anything because the Urban League has not really, you know, and I don't understand, Mr. Edwards, what it is because the connection between the Urban League and the community should be a lot more solid, wholesome, and have a lot of integrity. But it seems like they have, someone has told this Scott Gray that there's certain people that aren't important. And the people that aren't important, he doesn't seem to try to address. Now, I did talk to him the other day because I asked him about this 13th grade piece. And you know, it's like it's, and he says, well, you got to look online, look on Senator Hayden's website, which I did and I found it. But, you know, I think it's very interesting that they would even try to push something off on the citizens of North Minneapolis as if, excuse me, as if that this is something good. Because, first of all, anybody out there knows yellow, red, black, and white, you have to correct the Minneapolis public schools. Then you have to correct the hiring process, and there has to be jobs available for something like this to even work. So in an ideal situation, in an abnormal situation, would mean that black graduation rates for the Minneapolis public schools would be in the 90s. Unemployment for African Americans in Minnesota would not be.
Hold your thought right there, because you just reminded me of something, and this is for our friend Steve Brandt of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, who 3 weeks ago wrote a piece on his blog so it can be recaptured on demand so the folks can't say that Donnie and Ronnie are making something up. Steve Brandt wrote that the Minneapolis public school system had falsified their graduation rate documentation, information, and numbers. And I want to ask the question of our good friend Steve Brandt, and maybe we can text that to him from the studios when we go off the air in about 3 minutes. Did he ever get the actual factual information on graduation rates in the Minneapolis public schools, particularly for students of color, and more specifically and concisely, African-American students? Glad you mentioned that, because Steve Brandt went after the district and maintained they had falsified documentation and numbers.
Yeah, exactly. And again, you know, just to continue where I was left off at, you know, Steve Brandt has no clue what he's talking about. Anyway, he needs to write the story about where his relative works at, what Minneapolis public school she works at. But anyway, the thing is on the one end, again, the schools would be graduating African-American and Native American students at in the 90 percentile. They would be college entrance would be up between 70 to 80% for Minneapolis public school high school graduates. And secondly, on the business end, the unemployment end, unemployment for African Americans, and I'm combining Native Americans in there too, which would be around 25, if not 30%, would have to go down to 9%. And there would have to be a glutton of open positions for something like a 13th grade program to work, because the 13th grade program would pick up the people that fell through the cracks, that didn't go to college, that just graduated from high school and just can't decide what they want to do. And then this would be successful, because then the Minneapolis Urban League could route these people into different corporations and jobs, service sector, or whatever they want to do to give them the opportunity to be productive members of society, not saying that they're not already. But again, this is like there's too many variables and derivatives to even look at this thing and make it successful. We have a call, Mr. Edwards.
Let's try to get it in. We only have 2.25 minutes left.
Yes, caller, you're live on the air.
Real quick, I just want to add this into the discussion. You know, just to remind everybody listening that something took place in this state that I didn't see happen anywhere to this point, where over 150 black children just peacefully demonstrated their concerns about equality in our public school systems. And it's interesting that the adults are trying to pitch a narrative around equity, and the children want equality. So I'm looking forward to how you brothers conduct your investigative journalism and also tie in this particular black leadership in this state on how they could possibly even consider representing a school district that is supervising such an imbalanced educational experience, not in that district, but also the state of Minnesota. So I look forward to seeing what you gentlemen do moving forward with that. But just remember, the children want equality. The adults are getting paid to pitch equity. So that's all I'm saying.
All right. Thank you.
Interesting analysis. But an excellent one with intellectual depth, if you will. We will take a look at that, Mr. Allen. Let's make a note to ourselves right at the top of the program, because we've got some additional documentation that would be in our hands to confirm maybe some of the confusion on your part about some of the contracts from the Minneapolis Public School District and other places. And the last caller was talking in terms of a couple of the gentlemen, Mr. Martin and Mr. Hassan, who are employed now by the Hopkins School District and covering up the arrest of two young African Americans for merely raising a question under their First Amendment rights. Woo!
Yep. And we'd like to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back next week.
Ah! Put your bad stuff. Bad luck.